Good morning. It's Tuesday morning. This is Debbie Bosky. Once again, it's time for the doctor's point of view. And joining us, Dr. Matthew Minahan, oncologist. Good morning, Dr. Minahan.
Good morning, Debbie. How you doing?
Oh, wonderful with this morning weather. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, it's almost chilly.
It is almost chilly. I know. It was a beautiful weekend, and we've got another wonderful weekend in store, and it's time for fall.
I can't wait.
I know. It's time. And everyone gets in the mood with the holidays coming and, you know, just what fall brings, you know, just a lot of wonderful time of the year before it gets too cold.
Absolutely. Looking forward to some pumpkin carving and hay mazes.
Oh, the hay mazes sounds like fun. And I know they just finished up with, what, the ACL, the Austin City Limits. You know, us in the medical field don't associate ACL with Austin City
Limits. That's right. You're thinking of an anterior cruciate ligament in the knee. Yeah. Unfortunate coincidence in naming there. But, yeah, in fact, I was able to go yesterday and spent the day there, and it was a lot of fun. Some really good music and some good food and some good times with family.
Oh, that's the main thing, is just good quality time with family away from the normal activities, you know, just some good times. Well, and also when it comes to October, and other than just the fall weather and the leaves turning and the Halloween, it comes a very close and dear to your heart topic that most of us women and some men deal with, and it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so we want to talk to you a little bit about that because you're all very familiar with it, and I know we preach about it every year and all year long, but breast cancer is what? One of the most leading causes of death in women in the United States?
That's right. It's if I remember correctly, it's the most common cancer in women, and it's the second deadliest cancer among women, with lung cancer being the most deadly cancer. And about 1 in 8 women will develop invasive breast cancer during their lifetime, and that includes all stages, so from very early stage that's easily treated and cured all the way up to very advanced cancer that is unable to be cured.
I know I was reading up on some of this, and I didn't realize they had narrowed it down to 1 in 8 women. I heard you just say that, and I was going to bring that up. That is really, really almost every woman.
You could certainly say that you will undoubtedly know somebody in your life that develops breast cancer, because I'm assuming you probably know more than 8 women. So
exactly.
It is incredibly common. My own mother was diagnosed just last year. And I, of course, through my line of work, I care for many, many women who have to deal with this. And to your point that you said earlier, some men do deal with it. It's not nearly as common. Men account for less than 1% of all breast cancer cases. But as you can imagine, many men have mothers, sisters, daughters, wives that develop it. And so everybody's affected by it.
And that's exactly what Texas Oncology is good with, as far as helping not only the patient, but the wonderful support group in helping the families cope.
That's right. In fact, there's a article that was recently in the Austin America, or in the Statesman. It's www.statesman.com/Texas-Oncology. And that is a page that we have joined up with the Statesman to get together. And one of the nice things about it is that it lists all the upcoming events and support groups and things like that. And, you know, everybody's different. Some people just want to deal with things on their own. But some people, it's nice to have a community where you can share your experiences and, you know, get help from others and give help to others. And this is one way that you can get plugged in. I'll give you that address one more time. It's statesman.com/Texas-Oncology. You can go there to kind of poke around and find different support groups that might be able to help you out.
Now, I know also there was some top breast cancer risk factors like age or family history, and I know it says diet and exercise and breast conditions. So when you say breast conditions, are you talking about larger breasts, smaller breasts?
No.
What are the conditions?
I'm not aware of breast size being necessarily linked to increased risk. Of course, family history, you know, if you've, especially if what we call a first degree relative, meaning a mother or a sister, age is important in two ways. One, cancer just is more common as we age, which is an unfortunate fact of life. So the older you are, the more likely you are to have cancer. And the other way it's important is if you have a close relative that was diagnosed with breast cancer at a very young age, usually below the age of 40 or 50, that's concerning too, because as I just said, cancer should be more common as you're older. And so if someone's getting cancer at a very young age, you worry about potentially a genetic familial disorder where you are more prone to having cancer, such as the common, or not common, but the commonly known BRCA1 and 2 genes. And there's several other that others that put people at risk for different cancers, including breast cancer.
Now, I know, you know, there's always so much media and hype out there about certain products causing cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, is there something particular that the breasts are sensitive to as far as diet?
Alcohol, I guess, would be the one that that comes immediately to the top of my head. Alcohol can do, as you well know, it can cause a lot of problems, and it increases the risk of multiple cancers. The most common that we think of would be things like head and neck cancers or esophagus cancer or through indirect methods, liver cancer. But it actually has been shown to slightly increase the risk of breast cancer. It's not a strong risk factor. If I remember correctly, the last numbers that I saw is that out of 1,000 women who were drinkers, there were 9 more cancers than 1,000 women who didn't have significant alcohol intake. So you're looking at, you know, less than 1% of all breast cancers related to alcohol, but it's in there and it's real.
Definitely. Now, I know the self-breast exams are a really, really good thing to encourage women to do, and because they do find lumps. I think it's like, what, 40% are found by women themselves?
Right. So breast cancer, self-breast exams are, it's an interesting topic. I usually recommend that women do it. You know, the official guidelines are not that strict. It's, you know, with mammography, we say you got to do it. And, you know, we can quibble about when you start and how often you do it, but it's very clear that mammograms save lives. Self-breast exams have never been proven to save lives, but the way I think about it is that every breast is different. Some people have lumpy, bumpy breasts. Some have very smooth breasts. And when I'm a clinician doing a breast exam, it's hard for me to know, is this your normal breast exam? Is this lump I'm feeling something I have to worry about? And if a woman says to me, oh, no, that lump's been there for 20 years and has never changed, then I'm not as worried, you know? And so the way I explain it is, if you do breast exams at least a couple times a year, then you'll get a feel for what's normal for you. And if something changes, you'll know it. Whereas on my exam, I'm guessing. So it's very helpful in that way.
Okay, but yes, I was going to get into the mammograms or mammography, but you went
right
and took care of it for me, which is right. What a doctor
yeah.
supposed to
so
do.
So in general, we recommend starting to think about it around age 40, and different organizations, because there's several organizations. There's, you know, the American Cancer Society. There's the United States Preventive Services Task Force. There's, you know, all of the breast cancer specific sites, and they'll all have different recommendations about when you should start and how often. I think it's very clear that from age 50 on, you should be getting annual mammography, and before that, usually around age 40, depending on family history and your different risk factors, it might make sense to start doing it around then. The problem is before age 40, the breasts are so dense that the mammograms just don't do a good enough job checking for breast cancer, and they're just not as helpful.
Well, and I also know that there have been guidelines, too, through your insurance companies and, you know, different types
right.
of programs as well, which we don't want to get into right now.
Right. That's, right. Yeah, that's a
But
that's
the
a
main
quagmire.
Thing is, and of course, I know a lot of the facilities in the area are in the joining communities. A lot of the facilities, some of the hospitals, they offer mammograms at a reduced price, you know, for screening for right now, which is
right.
a wonderful thing for them to do. So a lot of women who normally can't afford to get one, it would encourage them to get one just for peace of mind.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so if you find one, now I understand there's like stage one, stage two, stage three, mm-hmm. or something to that nature. At what point, I mean, I guess any finding is worth having a second mammogram or diagnostic testing done.
Right. So the timeline of how these things work is, you know, if you find a lump, they'll send you to a diagnostic mammogram. If you're doing screening mammograms just as a matter of routine health maintenance and they find something concerning, they'll call you back for a diagnostic mammogram. And the difference is really just the technique and how closely they look and what angles they use and that kind of thing. And they have a scale, a rating system of how concerning something is from completely to benign to very concerning. And based on that, you will likely get referred for a biopsy if there's something to worry about. Sometimes they'll just say, you know, instead of waiting a year, repeat in 6 months or something like that. But either the radiologist can do a biopsy or a surgeon or a breast surgeon can do a biopsy. And in fact, here at our Bastrop location, we actually now have a breast surgeon who's here. So that's very helpful because if I get a referral for someone with an abnormal mammogram, sitting next to me, I have a breast surgeon, and I can say, hey, can you work this patient in today? And, you know, we can get it done pretty quickly. But if the biopsy does come back concerning, then that would be a good time to, you know, make sure that you're seeing an oncologist, because even precancerous lesions, so when we're talking about 1 in 8, we're talking about invasive breast cancer, but there are precancerous lesions commonly referred to as DCIS or LCIS, which aren't technically invasive cancer, but we treat them very similar. Similarly, they get removed surgically, and then you, depending on the procedure you have, you might even get radiation afterwards. They don't require chemotherapy, but surgery and radiation is still pretty intensive therapy. And so I recommend anybody who has an abnormal mammogram or an abnormal biopsy should be seeing a medical oncologist at least once.
Okay. And with those that are invasive, there again, you could how quickly do you know as how advanced it is?
Ah, great question. So based on the size of it, and the symptoms that a patient is having and maybe some labs that we find, that kind of dictates exactly how we work it up. So for larger masses or masses where there's maybe some lymph node involvement felt to be part of the problem, then we would potentially do more work up like CT scans and things like that to go looking for other spots. Very small tumors with no lymph node involvement, the chances of them having spread are so low that we don't need to go fishing like that. So depending on the situation, you might not need an extensive workup, but usually we can get all this done pretty quickly. So it's, you know, within several weeks, we should know exactly what we're dealing with. Early cancers can usually be cured pretty easily with surgery plus or minus radiation. The more advanced you get, you know, bigger tumors or lymph node involvement, things like that, then you might need things like medications to help treat it as well.
Okay. And so you kind of answered my question that I was going with. It doesn't necessarily mean the larger the mass, the worse it is, or is it a lot of times you can have a smaller tumor, but it could be deeper?
Right. So breast cancer is very interesting in the sense that there's more to it than just size and location. There are certain, you know, all cells have proteins, and on breast cancer cells, there are three proteins that we care about very much. Two of them have to do with the female hormones, estrogen and progesterone. As you can imagine, those hormones are signals to develop breasts. They signal breast growth. There's another protein that we call HER2, HER-2, which is also a protein that's involved with signaling and growth of these cells. Certain breast cancers overexpress these proteins, meaning there's too many of them. And the combination of whether or not your hormone receptors and the HER2 protein are overexpressed or not really figures in for instance, if none of those are overexpressed, if you're what we call triple negative, where there's not overexpression of those things, those tumors can be very aggressive, and we're much more likely to be aggressive with treating those. On the other hand, if your hormone receptor is positive, those are more slow-growing tumors that behave themselves better. So we really try to tailor it down. And I'll be honest, the research right now is further parsing that down. I bet you 5-10 years from now, we're going to have, 5 or 10 different subtypes of breast cancer, and we're really going to be tailoring it to each individual person's tumor.
Y'all have got so much information and so much research. I mean, and we're so grateful to have you. And Texas Oncology and all its associates, and we certainly appreciate all that you do to try to get the word out about any type of cancer. And also, you know, that we just can't harp on it enough. Most of us in the older age group definitely need to know the do's and don'ts already. But the younger ones, you know, which they're at an advantage because there is so much information out there. It's my age group and older, the ones who are still maybe not necessarily a little stubborn, but think, well, it's not going to happen to me. You know, I don't need to have that test. So.
Right. As I like to say, the ostrich approach never works. Don't just stick your head in the sand.
That's a great one.
So I'm a big fan of, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I would love it if we could just find all these things early and before they become a problem, and I never have to treat an advanced cancer for the rest of my life. I'd do a dance. You can hold me to that. But unfortunately,
wait a minute. Have we seen Dr. Meehan?
You might not want to see.
Are you easy on your feet?
But the unfortunate reality is that even with our best screening tests right now, we're not 100%. And so either because people are less likely to get screened through, any number of reasons, or even if someone is doing their due diligence and they just end up with a bad cancer that's, doesn't behave itself and does spreads quickly, we do get some more advanced diseases. And one of the nice things about breast cancer is because of all the awareness and research money that goes into it, we have a lot of options. So we have a lot of really good treatments for breast cancer, and some women even with metastatic breast cancer, that's spread outside of the breast, can live years and years with our treatments. Sometimes we run out of treatments, and that's where clinical trials come into play. And, oncology clinical trials are a little different. We never just give, or we only very rarely give, placebo treatments as part of the trial. The only time we would ever even consider giving someone a placebo is if there really was no other treatment and the standard of care was just going on to hospice. We could potentially offer them, a new drug kind of trial. We call those phase one trials, and those aren't usually placebo trials, but phase one trials are where we have a new drug that's either, never been used in humans or has been used in humans, but in a different setting, and we kind of have to study it in this new setting. And we actually have a very active phase one program in Texas Oncology. And in the Austin area, you could certainly come see us in Bastrop, and if you're eligible for phase one trials, we could send you to our location in Austin that does those. My point being that if you come see us here in Bastrop or any of our many Texas Oncology sites throughout the state, you're guaranteed to get standard of care treatment. But what we also do is we take place in many, many clinical trials. And in fact, we've been involved with clinical trials in over one-third of the drugs that have been brought to bear in the market in breast cancer. And so you always have that option of accessing things that you wouldn't normally have access to otherwise. That's going to vary by person to person. And make sure that when you come in, you talk to your doctor about whether or not that's appropriate or reasonable for you. But it is one thing that we do have to offer.
And that is amazing, and that is awful. It's just wonderful to actually say that we have that right here in our state or in Austin, which is within driving distance, but you can go see the doctor there in Bastrop.
Right.
And I know we could go on, but unfortunately time is allowing us to.
Right.
Give us the office phone number and at the Bastrop location, please.
Right. So here in Bastrop, our phone number is 512-308-9024. That's 308-9024. We're open 5 days a week. We have a medical oncology service that can do medications to treat cancer. We have a breast surgeon who's here as well. And We do IV fluids, we do chemotherapy, we do shots, we do regular office visits, and basically we're here to help you get plugged in.
And it's so wonderful not to have to go all the way into Austin, so we certainly thank you so very much. But the best thing is to get your mammogram and to find the breast cancer, any type of screening that you can do at the earliest stage.
That's right. Primary care physicians are the key. Make sure that you've got somebody that you're seeing at least once a year who can make sure that you're up to date on all these things that need to be checked out.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Matthew Meneham with Texas Oncology. And I want to thank all my listeners and all my sponsors for allowing us to bring you all this wonderful health information right here on your hometown radio, KULM 98.3.